Bill Bennett's in the Auckland studio, our tech correspondent this morning. Hi, Bill.
Morning.
AI, talking about it a lot at the moment, it is picking up a pace in terms of the role it is already playing in job replacement or productivity gains, whichever way you want to look at it. I was reading an interesting article this morning about Spark and the millions of dollars it is saving as it begins to embrace more and more AI in certain tasks. What is it that people are saying about whose jobs will be hit the hardest?
Well, it's going to be women. It's going to be women who are hit much harder than men. And that's not because, I mean, it's not because tech bros are misogynistic rat bags, although, you know, that could apply. It's got more to do with the fact that men and women are not spread evenly across the various industries and roles within those industries. And so it means that the jobs that women tend towards doing are those that are more likely to be automated with AI than the ones that men are doing. I mean, a really good example of that is that you will get women who work as administrative assistants in things like the medical areas or the legal areas and so on. And those jobs are largely done by women around the world, whereas things like mechanical engineers or electrical engineers, those jobs are done largely by men, and they're jobs that will probably be enhanced by AI. So but it's not a gender bias as much as a sort of task bias, but the task.
Well, sometimes they're the same thing, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's where I was going with that.
Yeah.
And it says that a US survey says that jobs that 8 out of 10 women do are likely to be affected, whereas jobs that 6 out of 10 men do are likely to be affected. Another survey, which comes from LinkedIn, says something like 36% of women will have their jobs disrupted and 26% of men will. So it's not comprehensive, but it is definitely slewed towards giving women a harder time than men. It's happening unevenly too. I mean, it's not all happening at once. But the other part of this is, I mean, this and that in itself is a huge problem. But corollary to that research is that women, the skills that women have and the roles that women have, the things that involve softer skills, those skills and abilities tend to be the jobs which are more suited towards retraining people for work in an AI world. So women's jobs are far more likely to be affected than men's, but they're also women are far more likely to find a replacement should they be disrupted than men. So it's not all bad news, but it is quite severe. I mean, it's basically 20% more women are going to lose their jobs than men.
Does it put a timeline on it?
No, there's no timeline, but we're talking about the immediate future. We're not talking about 20 years away. We're talking about the next, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Mm. All right. What's happening now with the Apple antitrust? This was a big, loud announcement taken at the time, wasn't it? We've been talking for a long time about what's happened to antitrust laws in the States and how these various companies have been able to buy up competitors without the laws seeming to kick in. But what is it that has finally been pointed at Apple?
Well, it's quite the case against them from the Department of Justice is quite wide-ranging, and it covers lots of areas. But basically, the Department of Justice says that Apple has an illegal monopoly and it exploits that to its benefit in the phone market. And it's quite controversial in so many ways. And there's lots of moving parts of this, but there's a couple of things that I just want to focus on. The nearest equivalent to this was about 25 years ago when the Department of Justice took Microsoft to task. At that time, Microsoft had 95% of the operating system market. That was Windows was on 95% of computers around the world. Apple's monopoly isn't anything like that. Apple isn't even the largest phone maker. I mean, Samsung sells more phones each year than Apple does around the world. But in the US, Apple has a 55% share of the phone market, which it's not a monopoly. Samsung wouldn't have anything like that number of phones. But the one of the reasons why that's the situation in the US today is because if we go back 4 years, and we talked about that on this program, was that Huawei got pushed out of the picture. So the one of the competitors which was keeping Apple honest, if you like, was Huawei. But Huawei pretty much stopped selling phones in the US. So it's only since that happened that Apple's gone into the position where it's the largest selling phone brand in the US. Now, the debate about whether Apple has a monopoly or not is silly, because it just doesn't. It clearly doesn't have a monopoly. But whether it abuses its position in the market is another set of questions. And there's lots in that. I mean, the thing that the Europeans have been most upset about is access to the App Store. Apple closely polices the App Store for apps on the iPhone. And I mean, there's lots of grievances against it. But the biggest grievance is that if you are, say, a company like Spotify and you're selling a music service which competes with Apple's own music service, you have to pay Apple a 30% tariff, if you like, on all the sales that go through an iPhone. Apple collects 20%, they clip the ticket for 30%. And Spotify specifically is not allowed to direct customers from the Spotify app to the Spotify website, where they can bypass Apple's 30% charge and pay Spotify directly for the service. That's the big deal in the European market. That's what the European regulators are going after Apple for. In the US, that is on the cards. But the other thing that's come up in the discussion in the US is the business of green and blue bubbles. And this is positively surreal. You know, when you get a message or a text message comes into your iPhone, it's either in coloured green or coloured blue.
Well, one's an iMessage and one's a text, is it not?
Yeah, that's right. It's that the green ones come through Apple's own messaging system. And that's telling you that it's an iMessage. And
no, the blue one's the iMessage.
I think the blue one's the text message. Well, whatever. Whatever.
Trust me,
US,
I get millions of them.
Yeah.
Blue is the iMessage, green is the text. But anyway, carry on. At least it's different in Europe. Who knows? Maybe we just have our own thing here.
Well,
but
the thing
on.
is that the blue message, basically, young people are buying iPhones because they see having their text messages appear in blue as being inferior to appearing in green. So it's all about sort of status. You know, it's the status of someone who sends a blue message to an iPhone is somehow lower than someone who sends a green message to an iPhone. And that is what apparently has caused people to not buy Androids and go and buy iPhones instead. Well, the thing about the green message is that it's coloured green to tell you that it's safe and it's encrypted, whereas the blue message could come from anyone and it's not encrypted. And that's Apple's argument is it's a safety thing. But the fact that something so esoteric and so surreal should be at the centre of an antitrust argument tells you that probably the regulators are not focusing on the most important things here.
All right. So tell me, is the colour different for the Android user? The message sent? Because it's the other way around for the recipient. Okay, that makes sense to me now. So we're squabbling over the colour of the bubble. All right.
Yeah.
All right. It's interesting that Europe's done this, because when I was talking about antitrust laws, I was thinking more of the States and just the massive kind of, one could posit, anti-competitive massive buy-up that the FANGs have made.
Yes.
over any potential competition, and the antitrust rules just don't seem to have kicked in. Europe, of course, always a bit keener to be taking action, it seems. Now, your online girlfriend or boyfriend is spying on you. Do I need an explanation of what an online girlfriend or boyfriend is?
Well, I had to go and look this up.
Okay, so tell us.
but basically, there are a number. There's at least a dozen of them that are quite high profile, and they are officially they're known as AI romance chatbots, which is basically you chat online with They'll show you pictures of themselves, and the pictures are AI generated pictures of, well, you know, the thing is that 90% of this is boys looking at girlfriends. There are boyfriends online, but we're really talking about girlfriends. It's massively slewed one way, and they're particularly popular in places like China. And what happens is you chat with them. You know, you chat with them and you tell them things about yourself, and they answer you, and they giggle and have fun and so on. And it's kind of creepy and worrying in all sorts of ways. But what's even more creepy and worrying is these things are nothing other than devices to get as much personal information out of you as possible, which can then be sold to all sorts of people. And they also have a manipulative the capacity to manipulate is huge, but they have been manipulating people. And there's a case in Belgium of someone who killed themselves after their AI girlfriend suggested that they shouldn't really be living any longer. So they committed suicide because of an AI chatbot, which is terrifying in itself. But the real problem is the fact that they're collecting data, and they're also they're working out what you think about things, say politically, and they can manipulate your opinions.
It's really interesting. I was reading this morning an article. I didn't have time to talk about it with Judith Collins this morning, about AI and some of the regulations that the likes of Europe is bringing in already. And this seems like a classic example. I'm just trying to bring it up. I think it was a New Zealand Herald story. And one of the regulations that it wanted brought in really quickly was just this matter, the ability of it to be used to manipulate politically or otherwise. Another was things like being used to profile you and likely reach racist conclusions. But I was just trying to find in this Herald article what some of the regulations are that are already being brought in the likes of Europe. Are you familiar with them? Well, here's one here. Utah's got an Artificial Intelligence Policy Act. The EU's got an AI Act, which passed its final legislative hurdle on March 13. Here are some of the exceptions under the EU. Emotion recognition in the workplace or educational institutions other than for medical or safety reasons, using AI to manipulate human behaviour to circumvent free will.
Yeah.
That's getting a little complicated. Social scoring and predictive policing based on, that's a different matter again, mass scraping of facial images. I mean, we really are at the point already with AI where this is not a future regulatory need but a current one. And to your point, that we know the human psyche is inclined to form a relationship with anything that appears to mimic being a human.
Yeah.
And we know, therefore, that these can be used to abuse in multiple different ways. And yet, are we seeing any kind of control over what it is that that can be accessed in various countries?
No, we're not. And the other thing is that, I mean, we talk a lot when we talk about security about how a lot of the, I mean, I love the phrase that the security industry uses, bad actors. You know, it makes me think of like rubbish television programs and so on. But anyway, they talk about bad actors and they talk about state actors, states getting involved. And of course, states can get involved in this kind of thing too. I mean,
interfere in elections. They do it already.
Yes, exactly.
All the time. But my point is AI is this next step up again, even on, and personalised AI that personalises its understanding of your psychology is a step up again on being just having a bunch of algorithms shove rubbish at you. This is next level.
Absolutely.
And yet absolutely nothing being introduced so far that I can see to deal with this.
Well, it's hard because these things, some of these bots will be located in places like Uzbekistan and places that are, North Korea is almost certainly involved in this technology. And that's beyond being policed by European or American or New Zealand authorities.
Amazes me that China is so good at running its oh God, what's the word I'm after? blocking, when you block content.
It's fireable, yeah.
Blocking content being able to be accessed. And, you know, there's a lot of concern about that to a certain degree, obviously. Censorship. It's so effective at digital censorship, and yet it seems no one else is able to block the likes of deeply harmful AI actors turning up on kids' phones, for example.
Yeah, well, that's you know, you follow the money. I mean, the thing is that for the Chinese government and their censorship, their budget for doing that would be, you know, unlimited. I mean, basically, the Chinese government can get all the money they want to throw at that problem. When it comes to the West, I don't think our governments are prepared to do that. I think that it's, you know,
they may not be governments if they don't get their act together.
Yeah.
Because anything that we perceive as a democracy and people acting with free will and acting with what one hope would be some sort of shared sense of reality is under threat from this stuff. Under threat from manipulation. I mean, it always has been, right? But but very much in analog terms, not on the scale that we are dealing with now with some of this new technology.
Well, getting away from AI for a moment, the very simple version of that argument is this. When governments in the West, particularly the US government, but governments in the West talk about regulating or controlling TikTok, which is a Chinese-owned social media, people start talking about freedom and freedom of expression and people's ability to do these things. The Chinese don't have the same freedoms. You know, the Chinese can't go and use Google or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. They're not allowed to. And it's an asymmetry that the totalitarian-minded people are always going to win.
Okay. Printers are awful and getting worse. Sum this up for us.
Well, look, the thing about printers is we've known for years they're horrible things. I mean, if you run out of yellow ink on your cartridges and you want to print something in a black and white, you still can't print it because the printer won't start because the yellow print cartridge needs replacing. Or even worse, you want to scan a document and the printer won't start because you haven't replaced the yellow ink cartridge. It's a form of it's like a mafia way of running things. But HP recognises that people really don't like all this about printers, and they're turning the model on its head, and they're saying now, you subscribe to HP for your printer services, you pay so much a month, and you can get so many pages back in return. You don't have to worry about buying ink anymore. We'll send you the cartridges when they're empty, but you have to pay us $20 a month or $30 a month or $50 a month, or whatever. There's various tiers of service that you can go with HP, and basically, the more you pay, the more pages you can print each month. Sounds good in some ways. It gets around that problem. But there's two things about it which are really concerning. The first one is the moment this happened to me very recently, right? My credit card is due to expire at the end of next month. And suddenly, all those online services which I've signed up to with that credit card are cutting me out. It doesn't expire for another 6 weeks, but they're cutting me out. And people are finding that with their HP printers, they suddenly stop working because your credit card expires in 8 weeks' time.
It's a good way to get rid of some of the subscriptions you don't need, and maybe it's time to get rid of the printer.
Absolutely.
Phil, thanks very much.